Let me begin by saying this. I like gift cards. I like to give gift cards. I like to get gift cards. I know some people are sort of mixed with that, but I always think it's kind of a thoughtful gift to get a gift card. And people remember me, and it's always good to see how they may give me a gift, what place they may give it to me for. Teresa gets a lot of gift cards. You teachers get a lot of gift cards. They're usually like $5 gift cards to Starbucks or Dunkin' Donuts or place like that, which is great. We have a drawer at home that we keep all the gift cards that we get in. And we try to use them. We try to go through those gift cards wherever they are. And so, as I say, I like giving them, I like getting them, so don't think that I'm criticizing gift cards at all. But I do want to tell you about a couple of gift cards that are in there that I've had for a while. And it's for a restaurant called Stony River. How many of you have heard of Stony River? It's great. It's a little pricey. I only know of two of them, and they're pretty close together. One is in Roswell, and then one's in Duluth. They're probably 8 miles apart where they are. There's only two that I know of in Atlanta. I'm not sure if they're a chain beyond that. But this guy, in the last church I was at, he found out that Teresa and I liked going to Stony River. And so for Christmas one year, he gave us a Stony River card. And so that both of us could go, it's pretty substantial dollars that are on there. They're more than pay for both of us to go. And so, what a great gift. And I was so thankful and I was so appreciative to him. And so Teresa and I thought, well, we got to find a special occasion. You know, you just don't, someplace you just go on a lark. You plan to go there. And what happened was, we never did find that time. And the year passed. And so the next Christmas, he gives me another one. So now I've got two. And so now we're thinking, wow, we've got this weekend now. And everybody's like, yeah. And so that's probably what we're going to end up having to do. So it was like, okay, so we can take Anna and Alex and my son Chris and his girlfriend. We can all go together. We just got to find a time that everybody's home. And then that never happened. And I moved to Conyers, and there's no Stony River here. And so I have these unredeemed cards. And so every time I'm going through this box and getting another Starbucks card or whatever, I'm reminded of these unredeemed cards. And so I want you to think about that image. How many of you would say at home you have unredeemed cards that are sitting somewhere that you haven't turned in? Wow, less in here than it was in the 8 o'clock service. You guys gather and spend on them. But you know, they say in general, Americans, it's $500 per family, $300. $300 per family, per household, of unused, unredeemed cards. And you can see that happens. Maybe you get one and it's lost, or you only use part of it. But there's a lot of money that is tied up in this when you start counting it down. That's why retailers also really love gift cards. Because it's about $1 billion per year. $1 billion a year that goes unredeemed. Just to give you the source on that, that's the Journal of State Taxation. I looked at that this week. $300 per family, about $1 billion a year, and about $41 billion total, they say, that is out, that hasn't been redeemed on gift cards. So we are talking about SHAPE. And SHAPE is an acrostic for spiritual gifts, which we're going to really drill down on some today. Heart, that could also be passions, but if they use passion, it would spell SPAPE. Wouldn't be quite as simple. So heart, abilities, personality, and experience. We'll be looking at those last four in a little bit more detail in coming weeks. But today we want to talk about spiritual gifts. I want you to remind you also one thing that I said last week is that I went wrong direction. And so the shape of a church and the shape of its members are inextricably linked. Discovering your shape, discovering your spiritual gifts, it is not just something for you. It's not a self-help thing. But every believer has been given a spiritual gift by God for use and service in the church. And so when we're in here in the sermon time, I'm going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about how it all works together. In your classes, if you're in a small group or in a Sunday class, you're going to be drilling down on the individual part of it. And if you don't know your spiritual gifts, there's going to be some resources to do that to help you discover your shape. But I want to think back now as we get started talking about spiritual gifts to these gift cards, these unused gifts. Now think about this. The person who gave you that card, or the person you gave that card that didn't get used, I mean, there was an intention there, right? They meant for you to use it. There was a reason they chose you and gave you that card, and they likely envisioned their gifts as something that you either wanted or really needed. And so it would be a gift that would be helpful. It would be something that would be useful. Somewhere in their mind was this idea of usefulness when they selected for you. And when it comes to spiritual gifts, that is the same. God has given us spiritual gifts for use in His church. And I'm thankful to say that within our church, I see a lot of people who know their spiritual gifts and that are living their ministry through those spiritual gifts. I believe programs like Disciple Bible Study and other things have helped with that. But what George Barna tells us, that really nearly two-thirds of the self-described Christians taking part in the study had not accurately applied what they had heard or what the Bible teaches on the subject in their life. Really, I think it was about a certain percentage, around 60%, I think, of people that had heard of spiritual gifts that went to church. But of those, when it comes to biblical understanding, the gifts that are laid out in the Bible, that wasn't what they said when they said what their gifts were. They said, you know, I have a spiritual gift of sense of humor. Well, it's great you've got a spiritual gift. I mean, it's great that you've got a sense of humor. But that's not what God, that's what the New Testament talks about when it comes to spiritual gifts. Or somebody would say, I have the spiritual gift of music, or the spiritual gift of laughter, or something like that. There's some very specific gifts that are in the New Testament. And so we want to look at, you know, why is it, if it's such a big deal in the New Testament, that we don't hear about it, we don't focus more on it, and that we don't see it lived out in the local church? And some of you may say, well, Dave, you're the preacher. Why don't you preach on it more? And I confess that. I do. I need to be talking about it more and focusing this more on that as we grow. But I want to talk about how I feel like we as the church got away from spiritual gifts. And to do this, I want to give you a ridiculously oversimplified history of the Judeo-Christian faith, where it started and what you experience now. And I will give you a nerd alert. I don't know if I've ever told you what my doctoral dissertation was when I got my PhD. I think I told Nate. Nate and I should, that he just got it. But my dissertation was on the decline and enablement of the ministry of the laos, the local church. And so laos is a Greek word we'll get into in a second. So you can see how that could end up being really boring. I'm going to try not to make it boring, but I'm going to tell you how I thought, where I saw the decline come from. And so what I want you to think about is, what comes to your mind when you hear the word church? What do you think of when you hear church? Do you think red brick building with cross top spire? Do you think the denomination, you know, the church? Do you think about the hierarchy of clergymen or priests? Do you refer to that as church? If you actually, and I did, if you actually go and look up in the dictionary what it says a church is, there are like six definitions there. Only one of them, would I say, really fits what the New Testament understanding of the church was. It's these things, the building, the hierarchy. What really matters, what really should matter to us, is what the New Testament, how it uses church, how they understood the church of Jesus Christ as the Holy Spirit came on Pentecost, when it was really close and new and starting fresh and powerful. They had an understanding of church. And it came from this. The word church, most of the time in the New Testament, not every time, but most of the time in the New Testament, And when Jesus talked to Peter and said, you know, you are Petra, you are the rock, and on this I will build mine, it was a word, ecclesia. It wasn't an English word or some other King James word that said church and it's what it meant. No, it was literally ecclesia. That is the Greek word that was used. And what that means is called out. Called out. Literally, that's what it means. So the church is called out for a reason. God has called out, and it was this movement. It was this powerful movement of those who have been called by God and saw themselves shaped for a purpose. And so in the New Testament church, and as Paul writes to them, you see, a spiritual gift is given to each of us as a means of helping the entire church. And so all of the people, all of the believers there believed that they had received a spiritual gift. And the belief was that everybody has at least one. Those that are listed there in the New Testament, and some people are a mix of those. 1 Corinthians 7:7 says, each of you has your own gift from God. One has this gift, one has another. The gifts were different. And there was this image of the body of Christ. You've heard that before, right? That we're all different parts of the body of Christ. And that's the ecclesia, the early church. That's how they saw it live out. There's also this other powerful image. And I told you I was going to give you this history. If you go back into Jewish history, the priest came only from one tribe. It was the tribe of Levi. You couldn't decide to be a priest. You were, you know, that's your inheritance. You were a priest. And so the priest would go to the temple, and they would go back, and they would do all the funky holy stuff back in the Holy of Holies. And the common people, they didn't have any access to it. They were doing it on behalf of the people, this priest, these people that were called out. And so that all changed with Jesus. And so in Hebrews we hear, you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation. Now the you there is that word laos. Laos. Now that's a word that eventually came to mean laity. You know, we have laity and clergy. They didn't know that in the church. They didn't have laity and clergy in the New Testament early church. They just had the people. And it goes on to say that they were God's own people. They declare the wonderful deeds of He who called you out of darkness into the marvelous light. You might have heard of this saying before, the priesthood of all believers. Sometimes it's referred to that. Sometimes it's referred to as every member, every believer in ministry. I think that puts it in more common English. And so it was this understanding that we should have too, that there's not this hierarchy, there's not this distinction. It takes all of us together. Sometimes people say, or introduce me and say, this is our minister. This is Dave. And I never correct them, but I always wince. Because we're all ministers. And it's even a deeper understanding than that. It's not that you're a minister, 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 or the priesthood of all believers, and you're a priest, you're a priest, you're a priest. It was this understanding of it took the collective. It took all of us together, all of them together, to be the priest. And that was so powerful to them. 1 Peter goes on to say, once you were no people, but now you are God's people. Can you imagine how powerful that was to those people living in this time under Roman oppression and other places in really dire circumstances? But it was people from all kinds of backgrounds. There were Jewish people, there were Greek people, there were Gentile people, there were male, there were female, there were slave, there were free. There were those that had a deep faith background and those that had none. And they all came together in this ecclesia, and they discovered their meaning and their purpose as God gave them gifts, and they understand we have a gift for service, and they all worked together. It was a very, very powerful time, and they would risk everything for it. It was illegal to be a Christian. Many lost their lives, but yet if this image and this experience was so powerful, and they just kept on and they kept on with it. Now, don't think that they didn't have problems. It was all gravy or whatever, because they did. And you read the New Testament and the letters of Paul, you see where there are lots of correction on how the gifts were being used, and some people thinking they had a greater gift than others, and a lot of jealousy. But still they stayed, and the church grew and thrived, and probably never was as powerful as it was there in the beginning. But then, over time over history, some things began to change. The first century church began to evolve from a movement, an ecclesia, to an institution in a hierarchical arrangement of clergy and laity. And there were two early church leaders from North Africa. One was named Clement, and the other one was named, excuse me, I should have written it down, but they wrote some good stuff, because they helped shape theology, because people were trying to decide what their theology was going to be. I mean, the Bible doesn't have a section that says, here's the doctrine of the Trinity. They had to pull it together. And so there was all of that going on, but they also began to rely on a background of organization. And the Jewish tradition had been very hierarchical. And also some of those pagan religions, they knew what they knew, and so they began to organize, and you begin to see things like priests and bishops and cardinals, which we don't have in our church, but we begin to see a distinction between sort of the professional Christians who were the minister, the clergy, the kleros, the Greek word, and the laos, the laity. And particularly if you study church architecture through the history, you can see, because there's been times when it's been greater than others, and there's always been a calling back to be like the first church. But at different times, go to Europe and study the cathedrals, and you'll see where they have the communion table as the Lord's table. Sometimes it moves way back, like there's, it's a really long, narrow, and the people are out there, and then back up there, there's this sort of, it is a reminder of like the Holy of Holies. It's the place where the priests kind of work over the Holy Eucharist, and there's all this mysterious, and not everybody can have it, and so it's sort of this movement back and forth. Throughout history, there has been times. St. Francis, I think he died in like 1182 or something. So back in that time, St. Francis kind of called people back. Martin Luther kind of called people back to the New Testament church. And so time and time again, it's sort of being like we go to this hierarchical understanding of church that loses its power. And then revival comes, the Spirit calls and calls us back again. But over time, what happened was this ecclesia changed to another word, and it does come back from a Greek word too. It's not as used as much. It's a few times in the Old Testament. You can see it there. It's kirikon, and it and then it's kirsch became a German word, or was a German word, and it meant place or building. And so kirsch looks more like church, right? So that's where we get the word church, and it was a literal place. It meant, literally back in Greek, the place of God or God's presence. And so the temple was where God's place or God's home was. But also you see in reference to like the mountains and things like that. But this understanding of the church is not being an ecclesia, called out people, and most people would think they would refer to the church as a building. And when it does, when we do that, when we really believe that, then we begin to lose our power and our meaning. And so here we are with shape. And so I'll go back and say, why haven't we heard more about spiritual gifts? I don't know my spiritual gifts. We don't talk about them much. I don't ever remember you preaching a sermon on it, Dave. I have preached one or two. But I will confess that I'm called to do that more. But one of the reasons I think we haven't is this. Busyness. We get so busy doing all the other things and all the program that keeps the hierarchy and the other parts of the church together that we get off mission. And we fail to fully understand the purpose of the ecclesia. And my hope is that Conyers, I see it happening, will focus more and more on being a missional church where empowered people who understand their spiritual gifts are functioning in them and bringing out about the hope and healing of Christ. But I want you to think about your spiritual gifts. Your spiritual gifts. I want to ask for a show of hands of how many of you know them. It's okay if you don't. Because this is where we start. There's ways of discovering them on our website. There is an inventory that you can take to sort of help assess that. It is subjective. It's something somebody made up, but it is helpful. And you can, as you read them, you might have a guess of what yours are. Everyone has at least one. But the best way to discover your spiritual gifts is by service. It's by services you think, I think it's this. And then you're in community and your brother or sister might say, yeah, I see that in you. Sometimes others see in us what we don't see in ourselves. And so within that community, you work and you try and you serve, and then you find and you redeem that gift that God has given you. I'd like to close with that image also. Of those gift cards, those unredeemed Stony River gift cards, or whichever ones there might be for you. And I would suggest to you that in the church, in our church, in the Christian church, there are unredeemed gifts. There are gifts that have not been redeemed. They were intended to be used. They were intended for you to use to serve the church. And yet, they stand unredeemed. Unredeemed. Redeemed is a word we know in the church, right? Redeemed, I love to proclaim it, right? Redeemed. And redemption is Jesus on the cross. Jesus' blood on the cross that redeemed us from our sins and gave us meaning and life and purpose. And maybe there's some here that have not redeemed that either. You have not ever come. I never want to assume that everyone has come to that point where they've made that decision, where they've redeemed that in their heart and their life. But as you read and as you study, you also understand that beyond the redemption of our souls for God's purpose in eternity, there is growing in the redemption and the salvation here and now. And that is a spiritual gift, to fully know them, to fully embrace them. You were made for a purpose. Think about those early Christians. When they discovered that, it gave such powerful meaning to life. Once they were known people, now they had purpose. Now they realize that the sum was greater than the parts, equal to the parts. That together, they were changing the world. And everyone, all of them, together, it didn't matter if you were the slave or the slave owner. It didn't matter if you were the wife or the husband. It didn't matter if you were born into it or you just had heard of it. That everyone, every person had a purpose in place. That would be the greatest gift that I think I could receive. Right almost up there to blessing animals would be to see you all that haven't discovered your gift, discover that and just get empowered with the ways that you serve.